He had high apple pie in the sky. I hope so. Anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt
dam. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. There goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy for us to fall in love. Hey, baby, what's your hurry? Relax and don't you worry. We're gonna fall in love. We're on the road to romance, that's safe to say. But let's make all the stops along the way. The problem now, of course, is to simply hold your horses. To rush would be a crime.
Oh, it is. But we have to rush to our next hour of programming here. That's right. Independent non-commercial radio moves on. It's WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. And now it's time for our news show. Local news and alternative views here. WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views here for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Thank you for tuning us in. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm the host of the show and also joined, as we are most of the time, by other of our WHFR news team. And Dennis Reimars is here in the studio and Amy Powers and a very special guest we'll introduce in just a second. How are Dennis and Amy doing on the actual Martin Luther King birthday day?
Just fine. Thank you. How are you?
Okay. Well, I'm fantastic here. I finally stopped sneezing and coughing. That's how I celebrated my Christmas holiday. So I'm doing well. But in case I all of a sudden get choked up, I know that Amy and Dennis are here to carry on.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Yes.
Here's the check we're looking
there
for.
There you go.
Hi, Amy. I didn't see you there. How are you?
Give me a break.
Okay.
Well, it is radio. Our listeners can't see us.
I know.
Remember.
I'm trying to the theater of the mind.
We can wear anything we want to. Amy's in a beautiful sweater that's sparkling. Sparkling.
How does, how does it do that? Thanks to my mother-in-law.
Could you tone that down a little, please?
Yeah.
A little blinding.
Does that take batteries?
Shout out.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And Dennis is wearing a very cool WHFR hoodie, which is available online from our from our merchandise store, whfr.fm. But without further ado, our special guest in the studio, and I think he's enjoying our humorous comments, is the new member.
That's a fine line.
We have his microphone volume under control here. Our new member of the Dearborn Board of Education, and that's a serious thing. That's a very important position. Hussein Berry is with us. Welcome, sir. How are you doing?
Thank you. Very good. Thank you for having me here.
I have to ask first for our listeners. People know that we have an auditorium dedicated to, named after Sir Michael Berry, and there's a lot of people with the name of Berry. It is a common name, not quite maybe as common as Smith or something, but in the Dearborn area, are you related to Sir Michael Berry?
Yes, I am. Sir Michael Berry is my dad's great uncle.
Okay.
And I know him personally and got nothing but the greatest respect for him.
And as you said, actually, your family is not a recent immigrant family. Not that there's anything at issue there, but I'm always criticized that I'm a newbie in Dearborn because I only moved here 30 years ago. But you were saying earlier that your family has been here how long?
The Berry family just celebrated about 5 years ago, 100 years of the Berry family in Dearborn.
Wow, it's almost longer than Ford Motor Company was here. Didn't they do a 100-year anniversary a couple years ago, too?
So mm-hmm. I did.
So wonderful heritage and great family. Tell us a little bit about your background and experience. First of all, I don't know if you want to go into education and family and all that, but, you know, the things you were asked as you were campaigning for Board of Ed.
Sure. Well, like you said, my name is Hussein Berry. Lived in Dearborn most of my life, product of the Dearborn Public Schools, where my wife teaches, and she teaches at the elementary school where she attended.
Hmm.
We have five children between us. We have what I call the cycle covered. We have a child in the elementary, the middle school, high school, and one is graduated from high school, attending classes at Wayne State, and currently taking a class at Henry Ford. My oldest son, Ali, made me a grandfather about 8 months ago, 9 months ago. My grandson will be representing the fifth generation, since we're talking about the Berries, the fifth generation of my family here in Dearborn.
Well, I always felt that just because you have a lot of kids doesn't mean you're going to be a great politician. But if you're running for Board of Ed, to have kids at all levels, children at all levels of Dearborn schools, you get all those inside information about what's really going on in the school,
exactly,
at least from the student's perspective anyway.
Exactly, especially when you're involved with the PTA, the local PTAs.
Right, and of course you're interested of course, improving and keeping our system as good as it can be, no matter what. Is that in general why you decided to run for the Board of Ed? And this wasn't your first time. You've run several times before. It takes a while for the community to get to know who you are. There's that name recognition thing for this office. Was there ever another Berry elected to the Board of Ed? I don't think so.
No.
So, I mean, just a recognition of yourself, sir, wanting the job and people finding out about you. And by golly, you were elected. But did you feel that you could bring anything special to the board that they really need right now?
Sure. My family values teaching and learning. I myself have been involved in many, many community service organizations. About 10 years ago, I was involved in a little youth football program and reached out to the whole entire city of Dearborn, great city of Dearborn. And from that program, a lot of people started telling me I should get involved at the school board. Mm-hmm. Been always involved with the PTA for the last 18 years, so I'm always up to date with the issues. You're right, this wasn't my first time running for the school board. This was actually my fourth campaign in 6 years, with the first three obviously being unsuccessful. I believe anybody given a chance to serve the community, they should. And I've always served organizations where we're given most of our attention on the youth.
We know it's going to be a part-time job, and they, you know, of all the elected positions in general in the United States of America, the people serving on boards of education are paid the least, which doesn't mean they're not the most important, in fact. And yet, how do you see the job? Interestingly, there's at least two meetings a month usually, aren't there? Because you're really also in charge of Henry Ford Community College. You're the board. You're part of the same people are also members of the Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees, as well as, of course, the K-12 system.
You are correct. The same board that serves the Dearborn Public Schools and the Henry Ford Community College. What you said regarding...
Well, the two meetings a month, actually it's more work than a Board of Ed person in another city, because there's two major operations going on here and you have to make the final decisions and approvals for both situations. So it requires more knowledge gaining. I know you've had a tour of the campus this week and you've probably been on campus before, of course, but it's two separate but compatible, connected operations that really you're in charge of.
Sure, I can assure you nobody runs for the board for the money that they pay.
Yeah, right. But you knew that college was part of the responsibility.
Yes, I did. I'm very familiar with the college.
Yeah. I've actually heard some stories that some people decades ago ran for the Board of Ed in Dearborn, and then they found out after they were elected, oh my gosh.
No, I've served.
There's another major responsibility. Nobody said I had to, you know, come twice a month or whatever.
Yes, no, I was very aware that the board also serves the college. I'm sure you were. I've served on a couple committees. We served on a committee called the Business Advisory Board and a couple other committees. I attended the school many, many years ago. I did take a tour just a few days ago. The school definitely looks a lot different than when I was here.
Well, we're busting at the seams now because it's the thing to do, or the only answer to if you're out unemployed and your skills aren't current, you have to get involved with something else. And we have all kinds of training programs, certificate programs, even just enrichment program, and maybe just a class or two, maybe in computer skills or something that can help people. So it's understandable why our enrollment has jumped so much. I think 20% last year and 20% again this year. And hopefully you got a parking spot in the visitor lot this morning. Didn't have to walk too far. But it's great to be a success, but it's also a real responsibility and burden to keep the quality up and to keep the programs relevant. I'll tell you, I spent 40 years here in both English and the Fine Arts Division in telecommunications. Recently retired, but still here at the station. They can't get totally rid of me. But it's really a great place to work, I can say, from being here. But you got to put a lot of time in to make it good and to make it good for the students. And I'm happy to welcome you to the board. So you were telling me you've had only one official meeting with the board already, and it wasn't a positive experience for it. It was sad because of some tough decisions.
Well, I was excited. It was my first meeting. Family and friends were there to support me, but it was a very sad meeting because the meetings before that, we went ahead and approved layoffs of people that I know personally, know their children. And it wasn't a good feeling to be sitting at the table when those layoffs were taking place. Regarding the numbers here at the college, this is not the first time that the numbers were up. In the early 80s, when many people in the area went through were laid off, same thing we're going through right now, mm-hmm. took advantage of the college. And I know I have personal friends that came here and took the heating and cooling programs, you know, mm-hmm. electronics program, and they're doing very well for themselves. Sometimes when things happen, you know, we don't know why, but there's a reason why they happen, and sometimes it turns out to be a positive experience.
Yeah, our old Chinese proverb, and somebody says it was Confucius, but he wasn't Confucius about this. Bad joke. And that is, out of crisis comes opportunity. But you have to be ready to look for it. You have to sort of get out of the emotional veil or even the self-blame. You know, I should have done this before and then I wouldn't have got fired. But if you can just look at all the opportunities and, I don't know, spend some time on the internet, talk to, you know, advisors, counselors, whether it's at the college or elsewhere, and get the other options in front of you. And then you got to get going. And sometimes you might discover something that's a lot better than what you had before. It'll take work. I think being an educator for so long, what's exciting is, at least in my area of telecom, including this radio station, things are always changing. But you should be excited by that. It's always a new challenge, which is fun. I think some of the best TV and radio reporters will tell you, too. And why did you choose this career? Every day it's something different. That's got to be a hassle. No, it's exciting keeping up with what's happening, trying to do a responsible job on top of it. That's so important. You were mentioning, and let's actually ask for your background at that meeting. In the press and guide from this Wednesday, just 2 days ago, yes, the show is being broadcast live on the 15th of January, Friday the 15th of January. If you're listening to it on the podcast, I just want to clarify that, Dearborn Schools lay off some, but may recall some. And in fact, in the story, which seems a little confusing to maybe some people just reading the headlines, always read the whole story if you have the time, folks. We try to here. That at the same meeting, some teachers, 144 teachers were laid off, although six were called back at the same meeting. Talk about instant recall. How did that happen? What was that situation? It was the state of Michigan finding more money or saying they wouldn't cut as much as they thought? Was that the situation?
Yes, a little bit of background on that. Halfway through our school year, the state of Michigan decided to cut a lot of the funds that they sent towards the different public schools. And you're right, that night, probably about a half hour before we started that meeting, we found out that we're not going to get cut $127 per student, which works out to be about $2.3 million for our budget. And we went ahead and passed the layoffs of those teachers. But at the same time, we knew that we were going to be adding back the teachers into the classroom. And from what I understand, it's probably about 22 teachers that will be added back into the classroom, some assistant principals, and some other positions, too. That's not just, obviously, the teachers and the support system, too.
Now, we have suggested here, even though we're not part of the legislature, but from stories we read about what's happening in Lansing, and certainly the experience of Dearborn Public Schools, it's a terrible thing when you start the year thinking you have a certain budget, and then the changes start happening and cutbacks start happening, and it's almost disastrous when you can't do these things up front. In some cases, your back is to the wall almost if you have to make cuts. Was there any explanation from the superintendent about how Lansing didn't have to take this extra $127 per student cut? I mean, was it their incompetence, or was it maybe some of that federal job stimulus money? Do you know how they were able to not do this cut? Was that explained, or is it just from one day to another, they don't know what they're doing up there?
Jay, what's even worse is every year we go through this with the different public schools. By the end of the year, we lay off 40, 50, 60 teachers because we don't know what our budget's going to be. We have to wait till October for the state to pass their budget. Then we bring back the teachers, and I do feel sorry for the teachers. There's some teachers spend the whole summer not knowing if they have a job or not, and we actually lose some of those teachers because, you know what, they're not going to wait around. Yeah. And we lose some of the good teachers.
And we've explained here on the show, but it's a legal thing, and all the districts know this. They have to give them 90 days notice or whatever that you had to do the layoffs if you think you're not going to have the money. You can't do the layoffs at the last second, although in the middle of this year, you're doing layoffs. Although there's some notification, there's some period of time they have before it takes effect. It's a terrible situation, and so I assume maybe you've had some discussions with the school board and the administration that you're lobbying Lansing and the local elected representatives as much as possible to get some consistency in this, at least to get the budget somewhat secure by July 1, right? The start of the budget year.
That's right. There were many people that went to Lansing, PTA representative, the teachers representatives, a lot of the parents. We all understand that our fight is not local here. Our fight's in Lansing. Us personally here, with Gino Polidori being up there, we're very well represented when it comes to the education process. It's just the rest of the state just doesn't see it that way. The funds, obviously, the fund education comes from property taxes and from other taxes. And most we know right now, taxes are down. You know, they're not getting the money. The big blow to our district was the 20J money, which was about $4.9 million. That was a big blow that we found out after we started our school year. This was money that was supposed to be coming towards Dearborn, and that was taken away from us. We just found out on a Monday that we're losing portion of the money per student. Then another $5 million was taken away from us the following Thursday.
Right. The 20J money, again, just as a recap for our listeners, Dearborn had actually passed a millage and was supporting its schools better than the other districts. So when the state took over trying to equate funding statewide to the same level, the same amount of money going to each student, Dearborn and certain other districts in this area were already overfunding. And that was allowed to continue because the money was still being collected, first of all. That's the 20J money. But then Granholm and or the legislature decided to just stop that extra money. But in fact, as I pointed out to Representative Dillon on a phone interview we did with him in the beginning of December, Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights, how can they not give us the money that we're collecting here in Dearborn? That extra money is not coming back to us now. And he said, well, you know, they always thought about phasing it. I said, well, okay, phase it out over 5 years or something. Don't just cut it off all of a sudden. It was just a convenient thing to do that they had the right to do, I guess. But it's certainly wrong. And just so you know, we've mentioned here Representative Dillon in that phone call, which is, it should be public record, right? A phone call to WHFR. Okay, it's a legal binding contract.
It's more than public record.
It's a binding contract. Yeah, sure. Find a lawyer that will say that. Anyway, he said that, sure. And I think I even heard Granholm's office in the last couple of days saying they're going to try to get everybody together like in March and figure out a way that they can get a budget, even a bad budget. I mean, even an unfortunate budget, but get it secure. And July 1st would be the deadline. Now, maybe they have to change the Michigan Constitution or something to eventually demand that or force that. But, Dillon said, and I'm sure Polidori would agree to, that they have to at least do that, because this mid-year stuff is more devastating than having a difficult budget at the outset that you can count on at least for 12 months. Yeah. So what do you do? Does the superintendent actually, do we have in the district paid lobbyists that are representing just Dearborn in Lansing?
Yes, there are lobbyists that represent the district, and there's lobbyists that represent the teachers, the DFT union.
I think the college, we used to have someone.
We currently have somebody that represents us in Lansing.
Again, what's the advantage of a lobbyist instead of just sending the superintendent up every day? Well, I guess that's the answer, that our administrators are busy here doing their jobs every day, and they can't sit up there every couple days, and if something comes up all of a sudden, a bill or amendment or something, a lobbyist is being paid to listen and find out and get the information back or intercede for us at that moment. You know, Lansing is 90 miles away, so an hour and a half drive or whatever you can do legally, it takes a while to get up there. So we do have some people, and I don't, just to tell our listeners too, it's not a wasted expense, folks, because Lansing controls the whole budget. I mean, the purse strings are held really there now,
sure.
And so we need that connection. But these lobbyists are often lobbying for several different groups, not just Henry Ford. We're not paying like big bucks for full-time people. At least I don't think so. I think that they have several agreements. They're watching out for several different client concerns in Lansing, and they give us that on-site feedback there. But that's certainly a big challenge. Have you heard about what's coming up at the next meeting or the next 2 months that will be your biggest challenge? Is it more cutbacks or what do you know? Inside information. What do you expect is going to be happening? Have they given you any preview about the next couple of meetings and tough decisions you might have to make?
Well, the decisions we're going to have to make is we're going to see, you know, what we need to do to support the teachers in the classrooms, to support the administrators with all these changes. We just as earlier this week, we're giving the students a day off on the 29th and that Monday, which would be February 1st, I believe, just to give the teachers and administrators to give them a chance, you know, to organize their schools. Because there's going to be a lot of changes. It's not just the teachers that are laid off. There's what we call, too, the bumping of the teachers. You know, when a teacher gets laid off but actually has more seniority and a teacher in a different building, there'll be some changes there. So
So they might have to go to a different class, but certainly they're in a different building and maybe a different topic than what they were teaching before. I mean, qualified, hopefully, for the other topic, but they have to switch around. Oh, that's
what's unfortunate, too, is that our students are going to show up that Tuesday and possibly a different teacher that they weren't even aware of and it's been used to them. But you know what? In Dearborn, we're still a little bit better off than some of the other school districts. There are school districts that are closing buildings down. There are school districts. Actually, I was talking to a family where their children are going to attend a different district in a different city within the next couple of months. Wow. We just attended a conference just last Saturday. And the news was not good. There was other things that districts are looking at, you know, privatizing some of the services. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Some of the services, obviously, in Dearborn, you know, we're going to stay away from that right now. There's some school districts, like I said, closing buildings. Some school districts are actually looking at bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I was blown away. We actually had like a 35-minute seminar just on bankruptcies, educating board members and superintendents what you need to do and what you need to know. So it's scary out there. Yeah. I'm not saying that's where Dearborn's at right now. We're doing a good job, you know, trying to do the best possible job right now to educate our
kids. Of course, Detroit is under the outside financial supervisor appointed by the state because of their budget situation. They have a terrible, terrible crisis. And we mentioned last week that studies came out nationally that they're doing the worst job of any urban school district in the whole United States in terms, I think it was a particular math test in the eighth grade level, but it sort of represented the terrible curriculum problems and learning problems that they have. But they do have a different situation than we do, thanks to, well, our administration and our teachers and of course the dedicated and motivated students and parents in the community too, that makes the whole picture complete. As in the Press and Guide, and each week on this show, we do bring people's attention to the Times Herald and the Press and Guide and then try to add insights or comments or ask questions between the lines. The Press and Guide has, for quite a while, brought issues up, and then they had a representative from the Democratic Party in the area and a representative from the Republican Party write short essays talking about the different positions they take on like state financing or health care or whatever. And this time was the first time they decided to do something, the two different opinions at Dearborn Public Schools. Amy Blackburn wrote the essay, A Board Member's View, about contract talks going on. So that's still coming up. And of course, the Dearborn Federation of Teachers president involved in this is the K-12 DFT. I should mention that the Dearborn Federation of Teachers Local 1650 is the representative for teachers here at Henry Ford Community College, but it is a different president, a different chapter local, if you will, and certainly a different focus. But Chris Cipperly is the woman who is in charge, who is the president right now, the DFT, and she wrote her point of view there. And I know you said you looked this over this week. Every educated person in Dearborn needs to read the papers all the way through. But Amy's position, well, first of all, what contract talks are still up in the air? Or you're trying to open contract talks with other unions? We know that the support staff union pretty much said they already voted that they were not going to accept the 6.3% cut, which would have been this year and next year, another cut. And so people got laid off. And is that kind of a settled, done deal for the so-called support staff?
Yes, the support staff, you're talking about the DFSC, that's DFSC, a non-instructional union. Yes, they voted and passed on taking a pay cut, so some of their union members were laid off, and that really took place.
Yeah, I think it was about 10% of their members. We figured it out here. We have high-level math skills in college. Yeah, that was unfortunate. We talked about the tough ethical decisions even for that union. I mean, you know, obviously the people voting on the agreement, the majority were the 90% that were able to keep their jobs and keep their pay. And it seems like they might have been voting self-interest, because here's their other union members. I mean, I thought unions stuck together. At least my dad was a union member for years. And they said, no, we can't survive without that extra pay, or it's not the right thing to do, and we're going to blame the Dearborn Board of Ed or something, but we're going to allow 10% of our members to hit the bricks. I mean, not protest, but to try to find another job, to be out of work. I think it'd be a tough call for me. I don't know how I would have voted, but I don't like the idea of union members turning against their own members.
Sure.
But it's tough. So who is still remaining to be negotiated with? Are you reopening contracts with the teachers?
We're currently negotiating. There is no contract with the DFT, teachers union.
Right.
We're currently, district is currently negotiating a contract with the DFT, represents the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you said my father also served for, worked for a union. Very strongly support unions. What I always tell some of the union members when they ask me, if there was some money hidden right now, it would be a good time to play hardball and try to get some of it. But reality, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. There is no funds right now. So I personally, probably if I was part of that union, I probably would have voted the other way. But, I also at the same time, I respect, the voice of their membership, and mm-hmm. that's how they voted.
Some people who criticize unions, and I have to say, is that they're obviously union is only as good as its membership, and its elected leaders. Some people are more capable and less capable in those leadership positions. And same thing is true with people elected to the Board of Trustees or serving a superintendent. I have said many good things on the air here, and I'll stand behind them, about Superintendent Whiston, that he has done a lot of things and said a lot of things and taken some hard positions that I think are very commendable. I don't know the whole story. I don't attend the board meetings regularly. I don't know what he does every day in his office. But one of the criticisms made of the board member's position by the DFT here is that the board negotiating team, which is not the board, but the negotiating team from the Board of Ed, has not been willing to consider anything in turn. It's either that 6.3 or nothing. They're not going to open up or try to review any other cuts. The president of the DFT says here, continued on page 8, for example, that they have actually spent money on efficiency studies for the Dearborn District from the Michigan Leadership Institute and also Plant Moran. Now, Plant Moran is known as one of the great business efficiency consultants. They've done work here at the college, and in fact, in regards to WHFR's position, which is a very small little financial thing, they made several recommendations that would save the college money and give more accountability for our small little budget in terms of buying new CD players and so on. And we said we need maximum flexibility and we need to get things quickly. If it breaks down, we're 24/7. If it breaks down during the show, luckily we got some microphones in the next studio, but we've got to have stuff quickly. Well, they made recommendations and the school didn't go for it, which boggles my mind, because they were efficient, they were responsible, and it came from Plant Moran. Well, again, I see the name Plant Moran here, as well as the Michigan Leadership Institute, which I have heard of before, but I don't know in what context. At least I know they have name enough to exist. And the DFT president says, these reports suggested many reforms and cost-saving ideas that could be implemented by the district to save money. Had you heard about those before?
Yes. Yes, yeah. That statement, most of the recommendations were followed. You're referring to that article in the Dearborn Pressing Guide.
Right, yeah. This is from the president of the DFT. So
that was an answer to President Blackburn's article.
Yes, okay. Right.
President Blackburn, obviously our budget's $200 million plus, with 86% going to personnel. For the last 10 years, I've been following the issues at the school board. Every year, we take away programs from the kids, from the school district. Mm-hmm. At this point, we're down to the skeleton. There is nothing else you can take. When you're in the education business, you either, you have personnel, you have programs, and you have the buildings. We've pretty much taken the programs down to the skeleton. President Blackburn's article was just a form to put a way to put information out there.
Yeah, and I think she did a great job. Yeah. She did. She told a lot of things a lot of people don't know about the benefit package.
Sure.
Although she does make it look like every teacher is like you know, $100,000 big time. And I know we pay Michigan teachers in general get a higher salary. I think we're in the top four of the whole country, that the public education is well funded here. But I mentioned when I came out of, now I grew up in Michigan, but when I came out of college, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And I said, oh, why not stay in my home state? They pay pretty well. And I'm going to be a darn good teacher. I'm going to work real hard, but I want to get paid fairly and not be exploited. I think, you know, if we want to trust the best people to our children, we're going to have to pay for the best people. So I don't dispute the cost, and neither does President Blackburn. Although in mentioning those numbers, a lot of our readers of the papers say, oh, that's way too much. They should get what they pay them in Texas. Excuse me, we're not Texas, you know. We have, but it's true. I understand what you're saying as administrator. That what is it? 80% maybe of the budget is in salaries.
Yes, 85 to 86%. I can assure you, yeah, that President Blackburn has nothing but the greatest respect for teachers, as we all do. The rest of the board, teachers should get paid very well. What they go through and what they have to do, you know, to keep up with their education and the loans they take out, they should be getting paid very well. But what it is right now is the parents were getting the wrong idea that this is something that the board is doing to our classrooms,
right,
raising numbers in the classroom, laying off teachers. And then she just felt it was her responsibility to put information out there.
Yeah, and she didn't do it in an antagonistic way. Unfortunately, President Cipperly either didn't have enough space or time to indicate what maybe additional reforms there might be that haven't been implemented. But certainly, I believe, and you know too, they couldn't have added up to that many raw dollars, even if they were implemented. It's all the money is going for, I mean, 80, as you said, 85-86% is going to salaries. So a couple percent there is easy, quick, but it's a huge chunk of change that you're going to save. And but we don't know about these other reforms.
Every dollar counts, but you're right. Once you're dealing with just minor changes, that's not going to affect the whole education process.
Although he hasn't been in the paper since last December, maybe he was starting to charge for his editorials, Tom Watkins, a former head of Michigan Board of Ed at the state level, he had editorial comments about reforms for the school system in Michigan. And he finally told us what they were a little bit in a column early December. And we sat around trying to figure these out here, too. You know, they're not going to add up to that much. And some of them are just, you know, a mistake. Like, privatization won't do everything for everybody, you know, whether it's food service or landscaping. And if you do it, you got to make sure the quality. Somebody's got to be monitoring the quality of these private companies. You don't want to reduce the quality of services, although sometimes having people on staff, and Ford Motor Company found this out with their PR and media department years ago, some of the people on staff got sort of comfortable, let's say. If you're not under the pressure of maybe competition with other folks, maybe you're not challenged enough to do the job well. So there are some times when privatization can work, but you really need to make sure the contracts are given out fairly and objectively, and then they're monitored. You almost need a full-time person you hire to monitor the quality of the private companies that might be invited in. You know, you can't just, okay, yeah, do all the trash collection for us. Go ahead. Is there some significant privatization going on now? Is it in the schools in Dearborn that you're aware of? Are like landscaping, I mean, cutting the grass, is are we doing some privatization now?
Nothing major that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, it's always something to review. I'm personally sort of against it, but I know there's sometimes when you have to get off the dime and you need you know, innovative, challenging companies to come in and maybe do it for you. I was interested. My daughter is a teacher, not in Dearborn, but she teaches middle school in Southfield. And boy, do they have economic problems. And they haven't had a contract as teachers in 4 years, just sort of an extension, but nothing official. And they've lost paraprofessionals, and they've got you know, special needs students mainstreamed in her classroom. She's got nobody to help with people that have emotional problems and physical problems, and it's quite a challenge for her. But I thought the and she has to sign out for every piece of paper. She's had to buy textbooks herself for her own classroom that she felt were essential. So there's those struggles. But the part-time teachers, the teachers that come in to fill in if a teacher gets sick, are not hired by their Southfield district. They have a company, sort of like a temp company for teachers. I didn't know they had such thing, that will provide, they will get somebody in there, and the district doesn't even have to worry about it. I mean, they don't have to make the calls like the principal early morning starting to make the phone calls to the usual suspects that have already been approved by the district. But in fact, they get people that they didn't have any say about credentials. Now, we trust they're all appropriately credentialed and qualified. But I thought that was, in a way, they sort of privatized part-time teachers who come in at the spur of the moment each morning. Do you know if we do that offhand?
Yes, we do. Oh, substitute okay. teachers, okay. yes,
well,
we
I guess
do.
It's a system. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
Well, okay, I guess I can't criticize. You think it's working okay?
Seems to be working okay.
There's standards and requirements. And
it's pretty much would have been the same teachers that would have been called into that classroom that get hired by that company. And going back to, you know, maybe privatizing right away, people are going to be talking about the non-instructional.
Okay.
Most of those union members live in the city. We start losing jobs in that union, we're going to be paying, you know, we're going to be paying later on. It'll be affecting our city services when people start losing jobs, start losing their houses, start losing, you know, all the things in the, which is going to affect the whole total city.
Well, we've kept you longer than we said we were going to because we're so desperate for information and knowledge. And of course, I think a lot of our listeners who are, well, some of the community activists, they actually find some of the insights we get useful to them, and we want to spread the word about everybody's point of view on these issues and get everybody involved. If they've got good suggestions, you want to know, right?
Yes, yes, I do.
Mr. Berry.
Yes, I do.
Hussein Berry has been with us for the last 40 minutes, and we have to move on with a few other things we want to put in the show today. But we certainly welcome you back. We've had Amy Blackburn here a few years back, and we'll be touching base probably with the superintendent next few months, too. And we want to get the word out and straighten out any misconceptions and you know, let people know how complicated these issues are, too. There's not easy suggestions, and I know how difficult it is, but it's one of those things you have to do for your low pay as a Dearborn Board of Ed member to hear the irate citizens complaining, although partly it's because they don't know the full picture. Maybe they disagree with some of the choices, even if they do know the picture. But it's a tough job. But thank you so much for running for office, keeping at it. Thank you for being there. And any way that you know, the Journal can help to get the message out about these issues, we'll try to do that, and we'll try to be responsible. Thank you for your time, Mr. Berry.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate being on today.
We're going to be back with more. We have a few more important things to cover on the Journal today. Let's go to Jim Hightower, our progressive commentator, and he's got some ideas about of his own about airport security. Hey, Metro Airport travelers, take a listen to this.
Pardon my modesty, but why is there such an unseemly rush by Homeland Security officials and assorted terrorism experts to sneak a peek in my underwear? Lest you think I've tumbled into full-tilt paranoia, let me note that they also want to look under your undies. In fact, in a ridiculous, authoritarian, knee-jerk response to the Christmas Day underwear bomber, our officials are pushing to install thousands of super-sophisticated X-ray scanners in America's airports so screeners can look right through the clothing of every man, woman, and child who flies. Authorities want to require you to stand in the scanner, spread your legs, and raise your arms in the arrest position while your friendly screener gets a front and back full body view of your nakedness. Supposedly, faces and genitals will be blurred out, but the body contours of every single passenger will be on display, and many will undoubtedly begin popping up on internet postings. So what, bark authorities? Freedom has a price. I'll say, personal liberties aside, these invasive scanners go for about $160,000 each. Who's behind this technological hustle? Michael Chertoff, for one. In dozens of interviews following the Christmas Day bombing attempt, the former Homeland Security honcho demanded that these machines be deployed in every airport. Now, why is Chertoff pushing so adamantly to subject every single American passenger to this peekaboo technology? Perhaps because the Chertoff Group, his Washington lobbying firm, happens to represent Rapiscan Systems, a corporation that makes the machines and will enjoy windfall profits if we're all forced to stand in them, virtually naked. This is Jim Hightower saying, this connection between his advocacy and his client's profits is something that Chertoff never volunteered during his many interviews. Curious, huh?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
As a dad, you'll probably spend years teaching your son how to hit a baseball, how to throw a tight spiral and hit a receiver, how to hit the strike zone. But the question is this, how much time will you spend teaching him what not to hit? Teach your son early and often that all violence against women is wrong. For tips on what to say, visit endabuse.org. Brought to you by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention, the Ad Council, and this station.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
Highway 61, the longest highway that I know.
Highway 61 offers nothing but the finest in a wide variety of blues every Friday from 2 until 6 p.m. I'm Joanne Korchenska, and I hope you'll join me on the cruise down Highway 61 every Friday afternoon from 2 to 6, only on the station Making Waves.
Traveling all the time. That's where my baby
stays. We're back with more of the new WHFR Journal. Jay Kornick with you, along with Dennis Reimars and Amy Powers. We just had the new Board of Dearborn Board of Education member, Hussein Berry, on for a great 40-minute interview. Hope you tell your friends about that and go to our website, whfr.fm, to listen to his comments. 40 minutes of a Board of Ed person, new Board of Ed person, but he knows an awful lot already. He's been part of the, he's been attending the Board of Ed for a long time, so he knows a lot, and he's very well informed. And we hope that the board is in a difficult position, so are all of the unions that are still renegotiating their contracts or negotiating their contracts, and it's tough times out there, but we want to do what we can to spread the word and get people to understand what's going on, if not totally sympathize with any particular point of view. Well, other stories here on the new WHFR Journal for January 15th. One, I wanted to commend Scott Bewick at the Times-Herald, because often they borrow, if you will, an editorial that they believe in from some other paper in the local area. That's relevant, sure, but this time Scott Bewick wrote the editorial himself, it looks like, as editorial director. I bet he did. And Dennis, would you share that with us, please?
Sure. Sure. The headline on the editorial, and this is in the Sunday Times from January this particular week, school's response to sweatshirt scandal shows short memory. And just to paraphrase, we had nine students at Etzel Ford High School, nine Arab American boys at Etzel Ford High School that made their own sweatshirts, their own hoodies, and the shirts featured the school's Thunderbird logo, apparently flying into a block style 11, and that's obvious reference to the boys' place in the class of 2011. And inside the numerals are what appear to be four square windows, and below in quotation marks are the words, "You can't bring us down." And this apparently offended students and faculty to the point where they did something about it. They made the boys take them off, and and the editorial basically summarizes that. You've commended him for. Let me ask you, Jay, are you commending him for what he said in this particular editorial, or just for the editorial itself?
Well, first of all, because he wrote it himself. I always think that there should be, and often even the Press and Guide, Tim Powers, editorial director over there, doesn't write editorials every week himself. Now, maybe there's nothing to talk about. Now, I think there's plenty to talk about, and we need to know the opinions of the people in charge of their reporters and getting all this information, some of which doesn't appear in the paper, but they need to keep expressing their opinions, and I certainly commend the people that know or in the know actually figuring out what's important and what is their point of view on it. I think they can be respected in the morning, and I hope no one would cancel a subscription to the paper or stop reading one of the Dearborn papers because they disagreed with an editorial comment. This has been the fear every now and then over the years. Like former ownership of the Press and Guide, they fired Gary Warrenchuk, right, who's now our commissioner in Wayne County, because he had too many opinions. Oh, it's probably safer not even to have an editor. And can you believe this? I don't know, publisher or who knows who behind the scenes, somebody in the back room was deciding what stories go in the paper, that they got by for about like a year and a half with no editor and no editorial opinion. And then when they got an editor, they didn't really have opinions anymore. They wouldn't publish them because, oh, you don't want to offend people that your paper is liberal or conservative or has a good idea or a bad idea even. And I think that's totally wrong. I really believe that that's a responsibility of every paper.
Responsibility, absolutely.
Every paper has got to have an editorial page. And okay, maybe the editor of the paper doesn't have to do it, but they've got to have some local people there doing it on a regular basis. And you'd really like to know what does the paper know behind the scenes? And because some of these editorial opinions, like I mentioned, the Democrat and Republican that they get, Morris Goodman, and I can't remember the Republican that they have representing the Republican Party at the Press Guide, but they're not working at the paper. They're not talking to all the reporters about all the meetings and all the things that happen behind the scenes with our politicians. And so... You know, they say, well, that's all off the record. Yeah, but you can still express opinions about things that are off the record without necessarily naming names. And so I think that's a vital function of every local paper. I commend Scott for that.
Absolutely.
One of the things I wanted to ask you and Amy, just real quick about the sweatshirt thing. Would you be offended if you saw that sweatshirt yourself as another student there? You know, they won't bring us down. 2011, the class of 2011. Yes, it refers to the World Trade Towers and how terrorists brought those down. But aren't they expressing something positive? Is it no matter what happens to them, they're going to get through? First of all, they're going to graduate from high school. God bless them, because too many people drop out of high school. But that they're going to be tough about their lives and they're going to make it. So is that offensive? Amy, you're a sensitive person along with Dennis, but... What do you think?
Possibly the imagery, you know, is what is offending people. But in general, I would feel, you know, that's I haven't seen a picture of the sweatshirt, but
yeah,
in your description,
right. it's very symbolic.
Positive,
it's just symbolic. It's not
fairly, you know,
no dead bodies
message.
Falling out of buildings in the sweatshirt, but
it appears to me to be a fairly positive message and. One that's kind of
has Fox News Channel hit this yet?
Everybody and CNN was the big
one.
And then all of a sudden it just disappeared. And I think I want to just if I can elaborate on it sounds like
please
your feelings, Amy. I agree completely. I think that you look at this and what they did was to make their point. They went to what I would consider an extreme. And just from my own, you know, I newspapers for years, and I know that sometimes that's how you get people's attention. So no, it would not offend me even a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I do understand what they were doing, and no, it would not even offend me or anger me. And then but in regard to this particular editorial, mm-hmm. it seems that Mr. Bewick was going more toward, well, the administration, SL Ford administration, should be careful because they could get sued. That's what I got out of this, mm-hmm. that it has happened before, and that's what the short memory is, that they have to be careful. And I think that there's things that have to be considered way beyond that.
It's a question of freedom of speech, and they're talking about the student, I think, at Dearborn High School that wore a T-shirt that
was
anti-Bush or
anti-war. He called him an international terrorist.
Right. And that was really controversial, but still it was ACLU came in and helped defend the person. It was his right of freedom of speech. Or the school, of course, has a responsibility to keep things under control to keep people, you know, calm and focused on education, and that was a distraction, certainly. So it's a difficult. There's two different views on that. This one, I guess, the only negative spin that I possibly in the back of my head could figure out from those sweatshirts. In other words, I think the kids didn't do anything wrong, just reminding people of 9/11, so-called, is troublesome. You know, it reminds people there were unfortunate deaths and people that did nasty things to us, and all those people died. But I guess it's maybe that they won't bring us down. Could that be, if you're trying to really be nasty about it, but could that be something referring to that the people in the Twin Towers or the city of New York or the United States weren't tough enough and they were to blame for their own downfall?
No. See, I'm stretching as far as I can.
Right, no, and I do. And
I find something negative about those sweatshirts.
I appreciate that you're doing that, too, because
I don't think it's all that bad, folks. I don't think those kids, if you're listening, kids, I don't think you made that bad a decision. Yeah, you did remind some people of the terrible event, and I guess these students were Arab Americans.
Yes.
And so
nine of them, and even their parents.
But I think
to this,
people are misconstruing what they meant, and I don't know what Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly or whatever they might have figured out about this. But I don't think it was so bad, and I do believe in freedom of speech, of course. But no, I don't know. Maybe there was people in the hallways that didn't understand or got feisty or something, and the school had to move in.
On a larger point, it'd be nice if it was just a point of discussion. For,
right.
You know, students, and if yeah. they can elaborate on their own why they did this.
And then people could say why it was offensive, because
yes.
I don't know. Okay, good.
Carry on.
We just got a couple brief things we're going to do. We are going to, because today, by golly, folks, January 15th really was the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr., and I think that the year was 1917, but anyway, it's Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, although it's celebrated Monday. Kids of many districts, including Dearborn, will be off from school, probably going down to the auto show, by the way, or something. I don't know. Next Friday is the auto show edition of the new WHFR Journal.
Now, nobody tells me.
Amy and Dennis didn't know this.
I didn't get the memo.
But I'm going to go down next week.
Oh,
yes,
that's
I
why
am.
It is.
I'm going to sneak in.
He just decided.
I'll give you my report.
Sneak in.
And,
I can just buy a ticket.
I know.
Journalists can sneak in.
So,
you know, there's a back door, and you say, Jay sent you. No.
Okay,
no.
But you're not going to be there Friday at 1 o'clock.
No.
You'll be here.
No, it's not a live report.
Okay.
No, except I'll be alive, I hope.
And, okay.
No, and in fact, we're going to bring our, and I didn't tell Dennis, but we're going to bring our extraordinary automobile expert, Ned Apigian, next Friday, too. Because he has driven a lot of these cars. He's one of those that goes out and takes test drives.
Really?
Oh,
you know,
I didn't
these
know that.
Retired people can do that. They
yeah.
have time to go out and
he
test.
He probably gets the free samples at the grocery store, too. I can
brand
see.
New car. But no, we're going to have plenty of our regular stories, folks. But I also want to recommend to you the WHFR Forum Archive, Campus Connection. Dennis, you were host of that. That was live on Tuesday, January 12th, but it's still there.
It
January
is.
12th. It's on our website. If you want to know what's happening at the college, if you're not, you say, well, I'm not a student there. No, but there's all kinds of events, activities, things going on here. If you're a Dearborn resident, remember, it's your tax dollars at work. 14% of our budget, I think, is coming from you. Thank you very much. But also, yeah, and you can take advantage of a lot of these things going on. Maybe you didn't hear about them. Some are in the paper, like the Motown Review is in the paper this week.
Right.
We talked about. You talked about the Ice Carving Club, and they're out there carving ice today very quickly because it's melting.
Yeah, because it's like 75 degrees.
They've got freezers to put them in after they carve them. So, Martin Luther King Day on Monday,
yes,
Amy, at the Henry Ford.
At the Henry Ford. It is a symposium with Dr. Clay Carson from, I believe he's from Stanford University, presenting Martin Luther King Jr. and the World Continuing the Fight for Equality. Symposium, 10 a.m. at the Henry Ford, January 18th.
And that that's a wonderful thing to take the kids to. I said the auto show.
It really would be.
Be very educational. They're going to recreate his speeches. And we have a special show coming on Monday, 9 to 10 a.m. Yeah, that's not usually when we it's usually classical music for WHFR. But, hey, we're making waves here. We have recorded a special tribute show with speeches from a lot of distinguished people. That's going to be hosted by our own staff from 9 to 10 a.m. in the morning. It's going to be repeated again in the afternoon from 2 to 3 on the official Martin Luther King Day. So hope you listen to the WHFR Martin Luther King special. But right now, at the conclusion of our show, we want to feature one of the most famous speeches by Martin Luther King Jr. To conclude our show. Stay tuned for more great music, blues music with Joanne Kay starting at 2 o'clock or so. But right now, let's conclude the new WHFR Journal, and thank you for listening, and thank you for thank you, Hussein Berry, for coming by today. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Dennis. This is WHFR Dearborn, Martin Luther King Jr. Now, I've been to the mountaintop.
Thank you very kindly, my friends. As I listen to Ralph Abernathy and his eloquent and generous introduction, and then thought about myself, I wondered who he was talking about. It's always good to have your closest friend and associate to say something good about you. And Ralph Abernathy is the best friend that I have in the world. I'm delighted to see each of you here tonight in spite of a storm warning. You reveal that you are determined to go on anyhow. Something is happening in Memphis. Something is happening in our world. And you know, if I were standing at the beginning of time with the possibility of taking a kind of general and panoramic view of the whole of human history up to now, and the Almighty said to me, Martin Luther King, which age would you like to live in? I would take my mental flight by Egypt. And I would watch God's children in their magnificent trek from the dark dungeons of Egypt through, or rather across the Red Sea, through the wilderness on toward the Promised Land. And in spite of its magnificence, I wouldn't stop there. I would move on by Greece and take my mind to Mount Olympus. And I would see Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Euripides, and Aristophanes assemble around the Parthenon. And I would watch them around the Parthenon as they discussed the great and eternal issues of reality, but I wouldn't stop there. I would go on even to the great heyday of the Roman Empire. And I would see developments around there through various emperors and leaders. But I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the day of the Renaissance and get a quick picture of all that the Renaissance did for the cultural and aesthetic life of man, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even go by the way